Pan-African Connect on cliffcentral.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Monday. The time is 1 minute past three. My name is Rosie Mutene, a.k.a. the Afro-Yiddish Princess. And welcome to my show titled Pan-African Connect, where we connect to people all across our beautiful continent. We talk about tradition, about culture, about music, about life, about activism, anything that is beautiful that is on our continent. And today we're going to West Africa. I have two really delicious West African men in studio with me, representing Ghana and Nigeria. I have Mr. Kole Ayo, who is a phenomenal singer and guitarist. And I also have Kwaku T, who's TV presenter, musician, singer, voiceover artist. And of course, he's representing Ghana. If you want to call through, the number is 0861-555-189. Of course, I am on Twitter. It is PrincessRTM. And I'm on Facebook and Instagram. But before we get into the show, we got to start it with this.
Yeah, you know what it is.
Black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish.
Yeah, you know what it is.
Black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish.
Yeah, you know what it is. My nose and ass, they're both big. Yeah, screaming for the hater, sipping OE at my past over Seder. Repping for my parents, when you see me, you know everything.
While pouring dime, soon as I hit the shoe, I go so hard. I'm Rosh Hashanah, I'll blow the shofar. Get my hair did, reading the Torah. I'm thugged out, I set my enemies with the menorah. And I got the pedal to the metal, cruising in my minivan, coming straight up out the shadow. Hear my grandma talk, but there's nothing you can tell her. We on the way to meet up with our Jewish diamond seller. She trying to set me up, but I'm breaking hearts. At least he's circumcised.
You know what it is. My nose and ass, they're both big. I use hot sauce on my laps and bagels. We on the corner, shooting dreidel.
Repping for my parents, when you see me, you know everything.
Black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish.
We shut it down, had my bar mitzvah at KFC.
Black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish.
Got a call from my rabbi, this just in. There's a great deal on kosher chicken. Wearing big glasses, but I'm chic though. My bar mitzvah was cracking all week, ho. I'm sipping Clico, and I'm keeping Shabbos. Every Hanukkah I devour the roots and lockers. No paper planes, but I'm taking flight. I got a free trip to Israel, birthright.
Yeah, you know what it is. My nose and ass, they're both big. I'm popping bottles with wine, bitch. Don't spend no money, but you know I'm rich.
Tripping for my parents, when you see me, you know everything. Some chicken soup, cause my flow is sick. If you need you a lawyer, I'll get you a deal quick.
Yeah, you know what it is. My nose and ass, they're both big. Yeah, screaming fuck a hater, sipping Hennessy in my Passover Seder. Repping for my parents.
Welcome back to the show. The time is 5 minutes past three. My name is Rosie Mutene, a.k.a. the Afro-Yiddish Princess. And today on Pan-African Connect, we're going to West Africa. In studio with me, I have the phenomenal Mr. Kole Ayo.
Yeah, baby.
How are you? Oh, my God. Did you hear that? You know that voice, baby. How are you doing, sir?
I'm super nice. How are you?
I'm beyond fabulous, as always. Always good to see you, bro.
Always good to see you, too.
You know, I have to tell the listeners, the first time I ever met Kole was 2004.
Yeah.
I was presenting and producing a show on Studio 53, and you had just come to the country. I think you'd been here, what, about a year or so?
2 years.
Yeah.
I think I went home. I was away for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks in America, and I just got back, and then you came over, and we had a beautiful conversation.
We did. My producer at the time was like, okay, Rosie, you need to work. Let's just focus. Let's focus here. I'm not so paying you to be floating with the subjects and all. But now, but before we get into your beautiful music, something that I discovered about you was that you, your initial studies were not music.
No. No, they were not. I actually studied accountancy. I went to school. I did all of that. But when I finished, I thought that there was something about music that I really, really like, and I wanted to experiment with it. I thought that, okay, since I have a fallback plan, I've got a degree in accountancy, I could, you know, pick up my certificate at some point and go look for work if music didn't work. But it was just too beautiful a journey for me to.
And when you know it's your passion, you and you can see that. I mean, like when you're on stage and you get into that rhythm, it's Kunle and the beats are right. It's beautiful. But now, who taught you how to play guitar, though?
I'm self-taught.
Wow.
I had influences. There was a guy that showed me the basics of guitar. His name is Rasta Evans in Nigeria. He showed me the basics, the E, B, G, D, A, E, the names of the strings, open strings, and from then I just started learning on my own. I there was no internet at the time when I started, so I used to listen by ear on records, people's records, Judge Benson, Oakley, Jonathan Butler, all these great guys. I would, you know, tape. I would just play 3 seconds and stop. What did he do? I'll look for it. What is that?
Wow.
Yeah, you know.
That takes a lot of dedication.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But wasn't it also frustrating? Because, I mean, if you've done your economics degree, you've got quite an analytical mind.
Yes, definitely.
You know, how do you adapt to both?
I think because of the sound that I hear on the guitar, and the ones that I hear that I can't do, but I wasn't doing at the time.
I
kept on going on. I kept on. There were frustrating times when, I mean, I had people like Nee Adams, who now lives in America, who would tell me, don't worry, you'll get there. Just keep looking for it. Just keep searching. Keep, you know, put your heart to it and you would get there. And there were times when I felt, oh man, this guitar, I'm not getting what I wanted to get. I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. I wasn't playing with the kind of people I wanted to play with, you know, at the time. And it was frustrating, but something just kept me going on.
I don't know what it was. You know, you don't have it. People don't understand. They're like, don't you get bored?
Exactly.
No. But now your first, I mean, you're an acclaimed and you're seen and known as a jazz artist. Did you always, when you were learning, did you always, you mentioned George Benson and a few names. Was that always the type of genre you pushed towards? Well,
I didn't know that I was going to be a jazz anything. I was just learning. And the African style of music for me was a bit boring at the time. We call it pentatonic. The pentatonic scale was a bit boring for me. That's pentatonic. And that felt too boring. I wanted to do more. What is happening between you know what I mean? I didn't know what it was. I didn't know the names and anything at the time, but I felt like I could do more. One could play faster, you could do stuff with the guitar. And that really just pushed me to learning from the likes of Judge Benson, Erklew, and I would try to understand why did they play this chord, and
what also made it sound so sexy and so beautiful.
Exactly. Difficult but yet simple, you know. And I think I just went all out. And when internet, you know, started, I would then go online and check why this, why that. You know, I tried to actually study jazz in Cape Town when I got here, but I couldn't afford it at the time. So I was friends with almost everybody, you know, who was in school at the time, you know, and they would show me stuff. They would teach me stuff, you know, so and that really helped me, you know, get to where I am right now, even faster in terms of just learning from their notes. And I once met a guitar player who played, an American guy, who saw me play, and I said to him, I wanted to go to school at the time in Cape Town. And he said, what? You don't need school, bro. Just keep playing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so I just made
sure
that.
The university of life. I mean,
that's
the best
way. I learned on the street. So I think that's the best way to learn from any profession, anything that you do. You know?
And you just got to dive into it. But what brought you to SA?
It was music. I traveled to Brazil with my boss at the time, Lagbaja, the one that used to wear mask. It was popular in the day, 98, 99, 2000. So 2001, we went to Brazil, we fired here. Oh, wow, what a beautiful country. What a beautiful place. I'd like to come check it out. So I came back in February of 2002, and I was recording my first album at the time, titled Ayo, which means joy. And long story short, I met somebody at Universal Music who now became my manager at the time, Boosie. Mm-hmm. Boosie then, you know, signed me up with Universal Music. They've released my first album. And then my second album, they took, you know, they signed
the first
artist.
Album, what was the inspiration around that? I mean,
that was a gospel album.
Oh, wow.
It was a gospel album because I grew up in church. I've always been a church boy. I'm still a church boy. Mm. So in Nigeria, the only music you could do for people to relate to instrumentally was gospel.
Right.
Something they could sing along to.
Yeah.
So, you know, that informed my first album. When I got out here, I realized that you actually don't have to do gospel to play jazz. You could just write a melody, make sure it's beautiful, you know, write a beautiful chord around it, and boom, you have a song.
Yeah.
So I think South Africa really taught me a lot. I am grateful to this beautiful country. I am as much a South African as I am a Nigerian.
Yeah.
Because I owe everything that I am to the beautiful place that give me warmth and you know, it's become home for me.
Mm. And any South African jazz artists that you've worked with?
Too many.
Yeah.
Too many. I mean, I remember when I first came, I met Yvonne Chaka Chaka in Cape Town. We had a
and she's
jam
just
session.
A phenomenal person. Just for spreading the word and mentoring people.
Definitely,
you know.
Definitely. Yeah. You know. I met Jabu Kanyele, with whom I recorded some songs on my album. Mm. All the musicians in the day, Moses Kumalo, the late Moses Kumalo, I had the privilege of doing a song with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Buddy Wells, I think he's a saxophone player. He's in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
Even Marcus Wyatt, trumpeter.
Yeah.
You know, I've had the privilege of working with all these great guys. So many artists, so many. I mean, right now I'm working with Oliver Mdukuki.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, but we'll talk about that a bit later because that's the exciting bit. But where was your first performance ever?
It was with Rusty Ostex.
Mm-hmm. And in South Africa?
From South Africa, yeah.
The Blues Room, the one that used to be in Sandton.
Yeah.
The little, oh, man. That was a sad day when their blades closed down. It was like being in downtown New York and like that smoky, jazzy, sexy type of.
Yeah. You know.
And what did you perform with Ostex?
I don't remember the song, but I think it was his song. I just jammed with him.
Yeah.
And you know, Blues Room just had to give me an opportunity to come back and do my own stuff.
Yeah.
Same thing in Cape Town. I was playing Manningberg's Closed Down.
Yeah. Another one.
Another one. You know. So I played different clubs and you know.
And your first performance back home? Well, your other home, your first home.
Like I said, I grew up in church, and when I started playing guitar, I was working in church, and I also had a commitment to be playing in clubs. I was playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, four times a week.
Wow.
And we rehearsed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So 7 days a week, I was playing music.
Mm.
So, you know, but I remembered specifically this gig that somebody gave me, and my friend at the time, Paul Play, he was big at the time, in 2000, 2001. It was the hottest thing in Nigeria at the time. And I had the privilege of being close to him. So I called him. I said, please come do this gig with me.
Yeah.
It wasn't really much of a paying gig, but we made it happen.
Mm.
And my clients were so, so happy.
Yeah.
And that, for me, was the beginning. And I had to move after that to South Africa.
Yeah, because you knew that you had planted the right seeds down.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then moving on to your third album, what was that one?
My first Ayo, my second Beyond the Borders. Yes, Beyond the Borders. Beyond the Borders was, for me, my teething album. It was really where I started understanding what Kunle Ayo is about, what my music should be. And I had the privilege of winning a couple of awards in the year 2004, 2005. I had Channel O, I had Kora Awards.
Mm.
And I met a lot of great artists, and that kind of informed where I was going. So the third album, it was more of me just still experimenting, but now infusing a lot of Nigerian music in it here and there, here and there. Because when I got here, I wanted to play jazz. I wanted to just play smooth, you know, smooth jazz. But I learned from my bosses back home that I needed to showcase who I was, who I am as as a Nigerian who lives here. People need to
You needed to create that signature, that distinctive, like when you listen to Juma Sekela.
Yes,
you know what I mean? It's like, I hear you.
So I was still experimenting and trying to find myself on my third album, Sincerely Yours.
Mm.
And I sang a little bit, I played a little bit, and that was really cool for me.
Yeah.
And that just opened even more doors. I met a lot of international artists through those channels, and we've been friends, and I'm still working with some of them.
And in your opinion, where do you think the state of let's start with West African music? I mean, there's been a great influx with the hip hop, with Ike Chukwu, with Nedosi, all of that. But is there a space for, or rather, where is the space for West African jazz artists?
Okay, the challenge we've been having is that it is not such a popular style. You know what I mean? It's not mainstream. It's too niche for mainstream radio, mainstream TV. And that has been the challenge that we as West African jazz musicians are facing. I have a lot of colleagues and friends who used to live in Nigeria. A lot of them have moved to America. Some in London. I'm here, you know, because there is no base. There's no we can't sustain our the industry is not sustainable for you as the jazz artist. You have to do other things and then play jazz as a hobby. I didn't want to make music.
No, you can't do that. Not with jazz, because I mean you got to live, eat, and breathe.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's a lifestyle, and what's happening within your life is transcended into your music.
Oh yeah.
You know,
which
is very, very important.
Oh yeah.
And where else? Where else have you traveled, first of all? What other people besides South Africa?
I've had the privilege of going everywhere. Zimbabwe, Lesotho, Zambia, almost every part of Southern Africa. I had the privilege of doing my DVD in London last year. I did a show there. I'm doing another one in March next year. I haven't been to America in a little bit. The last time I was there, I did a couple of gigs in America. I traveled, you know, quite a bit, but lately, because of my studio, I'm really working on making sure that there's a base for me when anytime I go, I come back, because making music is what I enjoy more than even performing it.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? So the last 2-3 years I've been really building the studio and the people behind, you know, the studio, to make sure that even when I'm not there, there's work going on.
Let's talk about that. It's K-Cool Productions.
K-Cool Productions.
K-Cool Productions. And I mean, I know that you're mentoring a few up and coming artists. Are you specifically keeping to jazz, or is it across the board?
No, across the board.
Beautiful.
Across the board. I officially released my first artist 3-4 weeks ago. It's a gospel album, very Nigerian, yet it's got some crossover appeal. Pastor D is his name, Adelakun. I'm excited about that. And I've got Yvonne May, who is a fan.
Oh wow, that's
great. She's a beautiful singer.
Yeah,
you know, I've got her on my bill. She's one of the people I want to release an album next year. I'm working with Juma Sekela right now, producing his new album.
Just make sure you don't bring any woman who wearing weaves into the studio. I couldn't resist.
Well, he says that he doesn't mind people wearing whatever, but the picture is the thing. He doesn't want to take picture with people who you know, because of what is heritage,
to a certain extent. I do believe in what he's saying, but this interview is about you, not about Rahul. We'll bring him in another stage.
Cool.
Yeah, but so, where do you plan to take, where do you want to take K-Cool Productions?
Our hope is to make sure that we mentor great artists. I'm meeting a lot of beautiful singers by the minute, by the day, and we're trying to see how can we, because the industry is changing. Physical sales is not working like it used to. So I'm using a style that, you know, I've got a beautiful guy from Cebu Kane, Ntolodi. Ntolodi sounds like your Kaifa Simia kind of thing. You know what I mean? Very close. You know what I mean? So he's been wanting to do music forever, but nobody you know, affordability, going to the studio. So what I'm trying to do is find people like that and bring them, record them, and we go straight to where they live and we sell the CDs there.
Yeah.
Not necessarily putting them in shops, because do people go to shops? And if they do, are they not looking for, you know, American hip-hop and all that?
Yeah.
So we've got to take the music back to the people, and that's the journey I'm on right now.
Yeah.
In terms of making sure that we find the artists, we record them, make the music beautiful, and then taking it back to the people, create a scenario, create a gig, letting people hear what, you know, what.
But it's
has
also
come
but it's also
them.
Teaching the artists the sense of entrepreneurship.
Oh yeah,
which
definitely.
Is where a lot of us fail, because it's just putting everything into the house. But you got to learn how to hustle and sell yourself at the end of the day.
I think that I'm still struggling with that issue, in the sense that when I got here, there was a system. You had a manager, you had a recording company, you had, you know, people working for you. Now, when I started Keku Productions, I realized that I was sleeping in a lot of, you know, other ways, wherein I was depending on people to do certain deals for me. But industry has changed. You've got to do it yourself, because once you get to a pedestal, once you've created a niche, people then look for you to say, I would like to do this for you. So a lot of artists are waiting for, I'm waiting for somebody to come and sign me. I'm waiting for somebody to come. Nobody's going to do that.
Get out there and touch yourself. How are we going to sign you if you don't know who you are?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
So I always say to people that if you have 5,000 people on your Facebook page and you can reach at least 2,000 of them physically, that's 2,000 CDs.
Push that,
You know, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, 2,000 CDs, that's a lot of money. There's a lot of ears that are listening. Let's talk about your collaboration with Oliver.
Well,
the great.
I've always admired him and respected him, and we met, I think it was 2005, 2006 at Moriteli, and we've been wanting to do stuff. But I would go back and forth Zimbabwe. He would come here.
Yeah,
I did my 10-year celebration in Four Ways recently, 2012. I had to bring him. But before then, we never really had the opportunity of recording together in the studio. So last year, was it this year? No, this year, I had to drag him and say, come, bros, let's do something.
The time has come.
You know, I wrote a song, and I felt like it was necessary for us to talk about who we are. Ile, which means home. And E kind of epitomizes the person that should, you know, help me talk to my people about you know, whatever we do, remember where we come from. No matter where we go in the world, we must remember where we come from. And it's in the culture, it's in the food, it's in morale, in everything that we do. Our, you know, where we come from should come to
it's
play.
Always got to transcend, because because the African diaspora is so widespread now that it's so easy to lose yourself and get mangled up into whatever environment you're in.
Especially American influences, British influences. We need to take a bit of that, but bring our home stuff into all of that, and make sure that people see in our music, in our everything we do, people see that it's actually very African, it's actually very South African, it's actually very Nigerian.
And I like that aspect of you, and I see you try and bring it out in a lot of other artists, because one of the things you said to Gina West was, you're beautiful, but it's not African enough.
Exactly.
And she told me that, and I was like, actually, he's got a point. You know, because I mean, she's a phenomenal performer, but the stuff that you've done with her, you know what I mean, it hasn't been released and everything. It's a different Gina altogether.
Definitely. You know? Yeah. I met Gina in London, and I said to her, listen, your music is fantastic, but there is no way. I mean, those are the things I've learned from the likes of Lagba Ja, Yuma Sikela, Oliver Mtukudzi, you know, all these great guys, Salif Keita. They will tell you that, listen, anywhere they go in the world, people, when you sing in English, they look at you. But when you sing in your native language, they go, okay, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it really gets to people, you know, especially element of what we don't know, we always like.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, because it's that exotic. Nice?
Exactly.
And especially now, because now people are waking up to the fact that Africa is sexy and it's hot.
Exactly.
So if you're going to be coming
just
with your
like
own...
You.
Oh, baby, you know, bring on the confidence. Okay, so listen, which track are we going to listen to from your collaboration with Oliver Mtukudzi? Yes. Ole.
Ile.
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 Koko marele ile labo simi oko
inga vavimi kuvima kuitira kumsha
ajule dukoni
le marende ile kokontale
siamza ngana geze
ta kutamba jelo apada sile
apanga kambo jirewa suka uya mwe
ni rajo ko file sile o
kana vijida ka fama de mza wakose
pipi reko jefora ile la tinke jorode
uzaka nganwe kwa wakava no place like home
oti ya kawarele ajole tabile
inga vafimi kufimu Toka toka kumusha Kuno tatia
Bolo de obaku Otu de reki wuko riko
Toka toka kuyame Kusha kuno tatia
Ayulo ayubo Lobo nyenu ile tia
Morning, gold MacBook, and you, silver MacBook, and you, space gray MacBook.
Let me finish.
You're all just so beautiful. Just look at your 12-inch retina display and force touch trackpad. Sleep now, my lovelies. I need to tell South Africa where to buy you.
Introducing the all-new 12-inch MacBook, now thinner and lighter than ever, and available at iStore. Why would you go anywhere else? Visit myistore.co.za for more info. T's and C's apply.
Pan-African Connect on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome back to the show. The time is 30 minutes past 3. If you want to give us a call, the number is 0861-555-189. I am on Twitter, Princess RTM, and of course I'm on Facebook, Instagram, under Rosie Motene. Today we've been going to West Africa and we were speaking to Mr. Konle Ayo on his music, his journey, his passion. And now we're going to be crossing over to Ghana and we have another delicious West African man in the studio. Listen to that laugh. Ladies, ladies! Kwaku T.
Yes, sir.
How are you, baby?
I'm good. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad you could make it. So you were born in Accra, but you've traveled all around the world and you spent a substantial time in your career in the States.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you started off with a couple of record labels. I mean, you started with Warrior Music, then you went to Pigeon Music in Ghana and High Life Music. Let's start from the beginning.
Wow. Well, that thing that they call Hip Life, we basically made the blueprint. Mm. We laid the blueprint for Hip Life back in like 1990 because we came. I don't know if you're familiar with Jay Gotye.
Yeah.
Yes. So we were in school together, and we started a group, and our main focus was to dispel the stereotype. Mm-hmm. You know, of Africa being, you know, a bushland and, you know, because that's what we got when we were in the States. Like, do you have lions and tigers in your backyard? That type of thing.
Where did you find the clothes that you're wearing
exactly.
that type of year?
Exactly. And then when we got home, there was, we weren't really accepted, you know, because of the way we spoke. Because it was like, no, this guy, he's American. Mm. You know, but the problem was that at that time, America was the thing to be.
Yeah.
Everybody was making American type music. So we were like, let's break the mold. Let's, you know, be a bit avant-garde and show our experiences through our music. Mm. And it eventually ended up being Hip Life. You know, Reggie Rockstone took it to another level.
Yeah.
That's another story altogether.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Pigeon Music, we were making it, my partner, Beku, he's Beku now. He's one of the top writers, ghost writers for Sony in England. Yes. So we started a group called Talking Drums, which had Panji was our producer, Panji Anoff. Mm-hmm. And we took it to a place where nobody could have imagined that, you know, it could be. And we followed the roots. You know, we sampled some Hugh Masekela.
Oh, wow.
I think we're probably the first group ever in Africa to sample, like, you know, Sibisa and, you know, African polyrhythms.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And then we went to the States because we wanted a distribution deal because we realized that we were the record label.
Mm.
And at that time, it wasn't popular. Everybody was looking for to be signed under a record label, as Kunle was saying, you know. So we went everywhere. We went to Def Jam Records. We went to Bad Boy, Sony. Everybody, but we didn't realize that if you drop a single, you know, your demo at a record label, it's not likely to be seen.
Yeah.
It's not likely to be listened to just because, like,
just all the red tape and rigmarole that goes with it. But it also boils down to the fact of who you know.
Yeah, basically. Mm. And we didn't know that. We were just like from Ghana, had a dream, landed in Times Square, right down the road from MTV.
Yeah.
And we made it happen.
Yeah.
You know, and from there we went to Atlanta, and that was when my love affair with Atlanta started. You know, met some really, really good people, ended up becoming like pretty good family with Andre 3000 from Outkast and, you know, Akon.
Yeah.
It's just different people.
Yeah.
And then I came back to Ghana. Eventually we started, Warrior Music wasn't set up then. Pigeon Music was set up for Warrior Music. Mm-hmm. Pigeon Music was me and Panji.
Okay.
Back in Ghana. And then I went back to the States, to Atlanta, and then we set up Warrior Music.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I went back to Ghana to finish school.
Mm-hmm.
And I started Higher Life Music. And it's been an interesting journey since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's so interesting about that?
Well, the ups and downs and being able to appreciate the blessing in what some people would consider a curse.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Just being able to take, being able to see that, you know, the shortcomings are also beautiful things, because if we can't learn from them, then we remain stagnant.
Yeah, it's all about growth.
Yes.
And accepting and welcoming
it.
You know, that stumbling, but then get up and
exactly.
then see. Yeah.
And I see it in my son. You know, he falls a lot.
Yeah.
He's 9 months and he falls a lot. He'll get right back up.
Mm.
He'll cry if you pay attention to him, you know, like most kids. But he'll get right back up and continue walking. And it's just, it says a lot. It's very telling for the story of life in general.
Yeah.
You know.
But moving back to Ghana, I mean, what were the challenges that you were faced with?
To tell you the truth, until I got to South Africa, I didn't understand the importance of PR, you know, PR representation. It was all about management. As Kule was saying, there's a system set up. You got your manager, you got your record label, you got this, you got that. Ghanaians, unlike Nigerians, Ghanaians don't really, we don't celebrate one another.
That's interesting.
Yeah, we try to be, there's a pull me down mentality type of thing.
Wow.
You know, whereas Nigerians, like, wherever they are, that's my brother.
Even if they don't like the guy, it's like, but that's my brother. I'll stand up for him.
Exactly. And that's why I love Nigeria for what it is. Because, you know, Ghana was, we were ahead of Africa in so many respects in the music industry. And back in the day, I used to look at Nigerians like, look at these copycats. Because whenever I listened to the radio, you know, it was always a Nigerian cover of, like, a Western song or whatever. But I think the beautiful thing about Nigeria is they will study what you have and then find a way to make it their own in an original way.
Yeah.
You know, so P Square started and they were copying Usher and stuff. And now they have their,
unique sound. Brand to be reckoned
exactly.
with. Exactly.
Yeah. And with Ghanaians, we like to watch somebody do it before we do it.
Yeah.
I think it's the new generation Ghana. You know, we're not the Nigerians take risks and Ghanaians aren't very big risk takers.
Yeah.
And I've stepped out of that to a certain extent, you know, just coming to South Africa and, you know, starting to do whatever, regardless of the challenges.
Like, and what's your opinion? I mean, couldn't, if you also want to throw in, what's your opinion of the South African music scene?
Well, I think South Africa's got a semi-unique sound that one could relate to with the, you know, in the genre that I am in, jazz, for example. It's one of the countries in Africa that has got its own style, South African jazz.
Yeah.
There is nothing like Nigerian jazz or Ghanaian jazz.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, but when it comes to hip-hop, I think the guys are now, you know, owning their own, and they're coming into themselves and really just
some of the guys
you know what I mean, a few guys but we are happy that now South Africa's got its own hip-hop, because people would always say that South Africans just take American music and whatever, you know. But like you said about Nigerians, I think, you know, we've been able to create, even High Life wasn't a Nigerian music, it was a Ghanaian music that Nigerians took and changed from High Life, became juju music, you know,
Afrobeat,
Afrobeat, you know, everything came out of that.
Afrobeat was synonymous with Fela and, you know, Nigerian music. Now Afrobeat is Africa. You know, so that says a lot for what the influence of Nigeria has had on this industry and on this continent, worldwide, global.
Definitely. You know?
But I mean, it literally over the last 5 to 10 years, there's been an explosion just coming out of West Africa. I mean, what has pushed that? Is it because people have more consistency. And I suppose accessibility to be able to produce the music?
Well, I mean, when it was talking about P Square, when they started, they didn't have all the resources, but they kept on pushing, and that is one thing that, you know, sometimes we Nigerians come across as being very arrogant to South Africans, because
people, I know, you get what you want.
You're truthful about it. Wait for somebody to bring anything to me. I came into the country, like I told you, I went to one of my big mentors, one of the big guys that I respect, and he didn't even have a studio in his house. He didn't have anything where he makes his music. So I came, I thought, why wouldn't you have something like that? You know, I came with a dream to own, even if it's not for commercial purpose, you should have I mean, I was in Jonathan Butler's house in America, and he's got a beautiful studio in his house.
Yeah.
He doesn't even record full stuff there, but he does his basic stuff.
Yeah, because yeah.
Every artist should be able to have where you make your little music.
Because it's a craft. It's not like making a car or making something where 3 o'clock in the morning you could get inspiration
So, you know, we decided that, you know what, we're not going to wait for people to bring things. We go out there and get it. And that is, I think, the journey that everybody, all Africans are now beginning to wake up to realize that. I mean, I'm glad for what's happening in East Africa, Kenya, Tanzania. They're waking up big time.
Yeah, the East African explosion is happening. And it's quite exciting.
They're killing it.
Because for a long time, specifically Uganda, they didn't create their own music at all. And they were literally doing covers. And I wouldn't even say it's sampling, because they took a song and they would just throw in a Luganda word, but it's the same song. It's like, okay, what was that like? You know what I mean? But now they're creating their own. And I mean, if you go back to the traditional East African, it's incredibly beautiful and incredibly melodic.
Definitely.
Kwaku, you had a performance, 2000, BET. Let's talk about that. That must have been phenomenal.
It was crazy, because it was in Atlanta, and what they did was they were looking for a homegrown act, you know, to perform alongside Lil Jon and Monica and 112, Keith Sweat, and so they didn't put it out there. You know what I'm saying? It's like they put an ad in the newspaper, and we went to that place, but it was a hoax. It was actually at another place.
Oh, wow.
Because they knew that if the auditions were at the ad in the newspaper, it would just be, mayhem. So we eventually went to that other place. We found a way, because we have contacts pretty tight. We found a way and we got there and we did our thing as Warrior Music. And because of the African element, because even the dance that we had, you know, an African element. It's like hip hop artists doing this. It was crazy. So we got it, and it was dope. It was on 106 in Park.
Wow.
And yeah, it was one of the highlights of, you know, our career as Warrior Music. It was quite phenomenal, because I believe that Ghanaians, I don't know whether, like, in general it's Africans or Ghanaians, Nigerians are patriotic. They're going to say I'm Nigerian or something. Right? But Nigerians are patriotic wherever they go.
Yeah.
But I feel like the African diaspora are more patriotic out there.
Yeah. I was actually going to get to that, because it's so widely spread, spread across, and every single pocket there's an African diaspora.
Exactly.
And basically 99% of all of those pockets, you're going to find Nigerians.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, no, we've arrived. It's like, okay.
If there's money there, you know,
even if there isn't money, they're going to create it. You know what I mean?
True.
They're going to create that wealth. It's like there's dust and they're turning it into gold.
Exactly that. You know? Yeah. So it was beautiful. It was the fact that so many different Africans were tuned in and watching at one time. It was kind of like Nigeria in the World Cup or Ghana.
Sure,
and
that's
it
powerful.
Was because this is the first time an African group had done something of this nature.
Yeah.
Especially in America at that time, because I remember when Akon released Locked Up and he released it on BET. And they asked some of the kids for their opinions, 106 in Park. And the kids were like, they introduced him as an African artist based in Atlanta. So a lot of the people heard African and they were like, yeah, it's all right.
Wow.
It's all right.
Wow.
If he changes one or two things, he'll do pretty well. They were like, Styles P was rapping on the track. It was like, yeah, Styles P made the track a hit. And then how many years later, Akon is phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, so it really says a lot for how people's minds are skewed.
Yeah, but it's all about perception.
Exactly.
And the beauty about where, and what I love about West African with the explosion was that you weren't afraid to express who you were.
Oh, yeah.
And you were proud.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for so many centuries, the world has seen Africa as this dying continent and, you know, it's starving children with flies and we'll sit around the tree and hit our drums. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So creating all these different essences of music, which is beautiful.
Just really unapologetically proud.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, this is the beginning of civilization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's
step make, up and own our
yeah,
space.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, we need to own this.
Yeah. Mm.
But it's like I said, it's been an amazing journey. Mm. You know, I feel like I don't belong to one particular region. Mm. You know, because I go to Nigeria and Nigerians accept me like I was Nigerian, because you know I've had so many Nigerian friends in Ghana. Mm. You know, before the whole Nigerian thing was cool, that I speak Nigerian pidgin.
Yeah.
So when they hear me speak, they're like, "Ah, Bakwiku, you should say you be Ghana boy." You know. So
how different is the Nigerian and Ghanaian pidgin?
Nigerian pidgin is more pure.
It's pure, ne?
It's more pure. It's like. Yeah. Ghanaian pigeon is watered down.
For our listeners who it's like virgin ears. They were like, "What is pigeon?" have a quick conversation between the two of you. Just putting in the spot.
The thing where we talk, we say, the language na pidgin English, very sweet English,
You know, see, but see the way this guy they talk in some very very deep way.
It's different.
Yeah, we want our own. They like see.
Una we try join
we,
cut and
yeah,
paste.
Yeah, we cut and paste. Mm. Yeah, but you your own Naruto.
Yeah, be like say just they talk. You see that say one? You even tick up, just they talk up.
Flow. Yeah, man. See, so it's hard for me to get out of like my Nigerian pidgin when I'm speaking to a Nigerian.
Yeah.
You know, because it doesn't gel well with me. Mm. You know, but when I'm speaking to a Ghanaian, I have to speak Ghanaian pidgin.
Yeah. Automatically switch over.
Automatically. Yeah. And I guess that's something I've had, because like I had to learn how to talk, I would say, and it sounds weird, I had to learn how to talk African.
Yeah.
With an African, I had to learn how to speak African English.
Mm. Yeah. It makes total
sense.
Yeah.
Because they used to beat me up on the block when I came in, like, this boy, nonsense. And what kind of English this boy did speak?
Nonsense.
You know? So I used to practice like every day in front of the mirror.
Oh man, God,
you know, with
you.
Facial expressions and everything. Yeah. So eventually, that's why like the American accent has never really left, because I switched one for the other.
Yeah.
So it was just interchangeable, you know, and that's how I survived.
It's doable.
Yeah.
You're one of your tracks that you did with Vanilla Black. For the listeners out there, that's Refilwe Morisele.
Yeah.
And it's so weird because today, you know, Facebook have got this thing where they take you back when you posted like a couple of years ago. And my first ever radio interview was on another radio station and actually interviewed her.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. So that's when I saw the name. I was like, okay, let's talk about that song.
Yeah. When I sent it, I was like, I remember having a conversation about her, and back when we used to work together, and I knew that it would strike a bell.
Yeah.
Well, this track, it's the latest single that I'm about to release. Funny enough, one of the songs that I sent you, you know, the Facebook thing.
Yeah.
I released that track on this day.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Today it's called Kweku Tutu.
Yeah.
Yes. Now Vanilla Black, of course, you know, she's albino. She's Africa's first albino high fashion model. She was on CNN and stuff.
She was also the face of Legit for a while.
Yes.
Yeah. Powerful being.
Very fabulous individual.
Yeah.
And I say the journey has been interesting because she's gone through so many like changes and she's overcome so many obstacles to become who she is. And the song is called Dear Teacher. Mm-hmm. It was a song that I dedicated, I dedicated to my mother because I was here, and it took me about like 2 years to get my permit, my work permit. Mm-hmm. And within that period, South African immigration don't allow you to leave the country. And within those 2 years, and people started dying back home. You know, so friends start dying and then families start dying. And then I think, so what happens? And I'm like, I have my family here.
Yeah.
So if my father or my mother, knock on wood, were to die, I'd have to choose between like my family here or my original family.
Sure. That's powerful.
You know, and I felt like there was something that I needed to tell my mother.
Mm.
So I created the song. It took me about a year and a half to do, partially because I know a lot of people here, and you know, I call you for a studio session and you're like, okay, we'll come through, and then you don't come through because you expect me to pay you, but you didn't tell me, you know, so it's like you give priority to other things, whereas if you had told me, you know,
money available.
Exactly. So it took me a while. There were a lot of obstacles. It's a beautiful song, It's I'm about to release it pretty soon. It's the track. It's the title track behind this movement that I'm starting called hashtag My Principal Teacher.
Yeah.
My mother was a teacher, and I just watched how, being as amazing as she was, the system looked her over as far as getting promotions and stuff.
Wow.
And I come to realize that teachers are some of those heroes that are like unsung heroes. Mm. They're the foundation of society.
Absolutely.
You know, so what I'm doing is I'm going around and I'm getting like tributes from different people about that principal teacher that inspired them to be who they are, you know, and it's been great. And it's funny enough, it's taught me a lot about other people, like different teachers themselves, because teachers pay tribute and who they really are, the challenges that they face. But you look at a teacher and you think, oh yeah, she's perfect, she's a teacher, you know, all that. So it's a I think we're going to take this to, like, you know, we're going to take this global.
Yeah.
You know.
It should. Yeah. Because that message transcends into any into any environment. And also just so important, because there's a void in terms of educating the girl child.
Very true.
And so this
very
message true. Is that, you know, teachers can either make or break a person.
Yeah.
You know, there's some teachers that put, I mean, one of the reasons why I could never learn Zulu was because I had a teacher who used to mock me and smack me.
Yeah, I know that
You know what I mean? And like now when I speak Zulu, I even hate it because it's such a beautiful language.
It is.
Because it's that block that one teacher put on, you know.
Yeah.
But listen, before I get onto that, let's listen to the track with Vanilla Black.
Charlie Monzo Frank. It's taken me about like 36 years to say this to you, and I had to write this letter because there was no other way I could say it, you know. I couldn't look you in the eyes and tell. I wanted to let you know that I was genuine in what I was saying and what I've been through and what you had taken me in my life. Yeah.
June 1st, 1977. Wednesday born warrior, dropped from the heavens to a mama and a teacher and a preacher and a soldier. Didn't really appreciate it till I was older. Older, gave a hell back when I was younger. You know, back in the day when I was a teenager. Stranger to myself, made me believe I was better than the average stereotype meta to every nigga. And worse, slogans was go the fuck back to Africa. Confused, thought blacks was all from that area. Stay in school and work hard, your only mantra. Heard you cry outside your room on a regular. Young mind consumed by wounds of a caregiver. Helpless thoughts, I'm minority and a minor. Shanti Prince lost a living in racist America. You helped me to see beyond my color, mama.
You remember when I almost went blind when I was younger and put that water on my eyes? You know, the reverend that lived right next to us. I mean, these are the things I think about. Everything's for a reason. Everything's for a reason. These are the things I think about when I think of you.
Multiple jobs working to pay the bills.
Whoa, this is powerful. Powerful, powerful. And you know what's so amazing is that you're speaking on topics and you're bringing in so many different areas where the average African man is too scared to speak about.
Yeah.
You're raising the bell.
I really had nothing to lose. Mm. You know, like after doing Big Brother, it's like, you know, a couple of people see me bare my soul, you know, to everybody.
Yeah.
So there's just so much that I've been through over a period of time that it's like, why not just be real?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Why hide behind, like, what people, I don't know.
What people's perceptions are, what they think that you should be.
You know?
But also, I mean, you've got children now, so you have to be real.
Yes, indeed. I have children now, so it's hard, though, because I can't, there are certain things that I want to say in the most realistic way, but then I don't want them to feel like they can, you know, curse and do all these type of things. You know, they're like two profanities in that song. And the interesting thing is those profanities are for historical posterity, you know, because there was a time where they would say the slogan was go the F back to Africa in America, you know, and there was a point in time where.
You know what ironic is that there's some South Africans that are saying that to foreigners.
Exactly. And it's funny how the same thing that I felt like, you know, was a debilitating, you know, mm. concept back there, back then, has followed me into Africa like 25, 30 years later, you know, as an adult. And it's hard for me to understand. It's hard for me to grasp, you know. So I guess I just journey on. I soldier on. And so I'm talking about xenophobia. I'm talking about racism in that. And I'm talking about just female empowerment, you know, because it's hard for I don't give my father enough props, because like he was a stand up guy. He is a stand up guy. And he was out there making money for the family. But inadvertently, it meant that my mother was raising a man, you know, and for a female, how does a female raise a man? But she found a way to do it. So it says a lot. And there's so many cases, you know, of men, of absentee course, fathers and women playing that role.
So, and also just child-headed households. So young boys raising children and still trying to figure out themselves, you know. So where I'm, you know, I'm so upset that we're running out of time, but where would you like to take this campaign? I mean, where?
Well, they say charity begins at home. So Africa, this continent, first, because we have our unique problems, you know, and our governments need to recognize that there are teachers out there who are amazing, who should be getting the recognition that they deserve. Just so that, you know, they can keep doing what they're doing, as opposed to just like doing whatever, because that's our future. So I say in a lot of my tweets, hashtag help save our future, because the children are our future. You know, and then from here, you know, when once the awareness has started, we take it global, because
it's got to be in everyone's tongues.
Exactly. There are other third world countries that are suffering that are not just African.
But also especially with what's happened with the fees must fall campaign.
Exactly.
Let's push it. You know? So the hashtag my principal teacher campaign, hashtag Operation Dear Teacher campaign. I'm going to be retweeting it. Let's start the journey, because, you know, yes, we start starting at home, but there are people all around the world listening to the podcast. So let's start the journey within your community. Mr. Kunlayo, what's happening? Next year, you've got another performance in London?
March the 7th. We're going to be in London doing another show. But before then, we in Africa, we're doing a few shows in Lagos, South Africa. The December calendar is kind of packed. But more importantly, we also just trying to, you know, help young, you know, talented artists to find their voices and find a place in the market, because we're not going to say, because there is no recording company, their talents are going to die. You know, we have to make sure that we keep pushing.
Absolutely.
And whatever it takes, we would do.
And of course, if you want to hook up with these guys, their details will be on my Twitter handle. They'll be on my Facebook page. Within the next 20 minutes, you'll be able to download the podcast, because you need to listen to it again. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it. And thank you for the music and for your honesty.
Thank you.
I think a lot of men, and I'm going to say this, a lot of South African men need to stand up and see what you guys are doing and what you're believing in. You know,
thank you.
We've hit a void in our society which needs to be filled with goodness.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good one. So we will chat next week. Next week, we're probably going to be going back, going to Uganda. But otherwise, follow us on me on Twitter, Princess RTM. It's Kunle Ayo on Twitter. What is your hashtag again?
At Kwe Obama.
Instagram
and Twitter.
If you didn't get it, go to my Facebook page. It's all loaded up. It has been brilliant. We're going to play out with another Kwakotik track. Have a beautiful day.
Pan-African Connect on CliffCentral.com.